Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the No Name Network. No, this is Mike Malloy Radio Network, isn't it? Is that where we are? The Mike Malloy Radio Network? That's what the corporation papers say, right? Or not the corporation. What do we have? LLC. Good evening, everybody. Well, another Glenn Beck listener makes the news. I think it was yesterday. Fox News is truly trolling for assassins. They are looking for people who will take a chance and go ahead and kill or attempt to kill Barack Obama. This is the main focus of Fox News Channel. Glenn Beck is leading the charge to find somebody, trigger somebody's craziness to the point where they'll actually go after the president with a gun. Well, they got a guy. Beck got a guy. His name is John Breck. Beck? Breck? He's a private security. He was a private security guard at Newark Airport in New Jersey, and he was arrested on charges of threatening President Obama. The other day, Obama was went to Newark. He was scheduled to today. He was there today. He landed today about 4:30. He's campaigning for Governor John Corzine. Port Authority spokesman John Kelly says this 55-year-old Breck, a Glenn Beck listener, obviously, allowed police to search his home in Linden, New Jersey. Officers there found 43 guns. 40, yeah, that's to keep intruders out, right? You psychopathic bastard. 43 firearms. An official with knowledge of this investigation, who spoke on condition of anonymity, says someone reported overhearing Breck making threatening comments at an airport coffee cart this morning. This morning, yeah. The official was not authorized to disclose the details, of course. A Secret Service spokesman says Breck has denied making any threats. No, what? Me? I said nothing. Anyway, so Glenn Beck scores another. He can put another notch in his armed guard's weapon. Eventually, either O'Reilly or Beck or Hannity or one of these other bastards will succeed. But this is what Rupert Murdoch wants. Rupert Murdoch has told his boys, his stable of clowns, murder clowns, go get somebody. It's America. They're crazy in here. Go get one for me. I want an assassin, you understand? And, so the boys are going to do it. So another Glenn Beck listener makes the news today. Yeah. Why pot is illegal. I got an email the other day from, or was it today? I guess it was today. God, I'm losing a day here. This is from Brian, who writes, Hi, Mike. Sorry to be a few days behind the topic curve, but allow me to offer a theory as to why pot is illegal. As an aside, I'm a professional grower for the California medical market. The problem, quote, with pot is that it grows just fine outdoors with little help in all 50 states. Imagine if it were legalized. Consumers would buy their spring starts at Home Depot for the same price as a tomato plant. With a bit of Miracle-Gro and two plants, up to 3 pounds per plant, 3 months later, they would have more product than they could possibly consume in a year. Think of the Christmas gift possibilities here. So in total, for about $20 in investment and the same amount of labor needed to grow petunias, an individual can produce all the inebriation they could possibly need for a year and without the hangover and wife beatings associated with alcohol. As with all things, follow the money. Pot is structurally similar to solar power, and that once you sell the consumer the initial product, there's nothing more to sell. Hence, both pot and solar are, quote, lousy, end quote, business models. Cheers, Brian. You're right. Of course. I knew that. No, I didn't. And then, of course, there's Kevin, who writes in. Kevin writes, I just saw a Chevy commercial for the umpteenth time, and something occurred to me. In this commercial, Howie Long tells us how this and that and the other Chevy model gets better gas mileage than its rival Honda models. When did this happen? When were Chevrolets ever even close to Hondas in gas mileage? Did they have the technology, or did they just recently discover it? It seems to me, since it takes quite a while for a car to go from design to production, that something's amiss here. Kevin, hopeless conspiracist. Also, a P.S. here regarding the public auction. I haven't heard anything else about the California Workers' Comp public insurance plan. I read on the company website that Pete Wilson tried to privatize it back in the 90s, and the business community revolted against it, so he had to back down. Also, Anthony Weiner stated that all flood insurance policies in this country are handled by the government. If that's the case, and the government is writing all those policies, who are the customers, and are they happy with their coverage? That's right. Flood insurance is, I guess it is all government. Goddamn socialist, communist bastards, right? One more here. Bill writes from Portland. A way to fix the economy. He writes, here's an idea that would be a quick fix to lots of the problems with the economy, especially here in the USA. That would be to start closing down MBA programs across the country one by one. The place to start is Harvard. After watching the Frontline show of PBS last night and seeing what the clowns who are supposed to be running this country aren't doing and looking at where they come from, here's a very quick fix to prevent future problems. I see nothing good coming out of the Harvard Business School. Look at who one of their most distinguished alumni is. W. What I have in mind is closing the place as soon as possible, if not sooner. Handing all the students certificates with employment and debts canceled. And instead of heading right to Wall Street, let's send them to places like Burger King, Home Depot, Target, Walmart, etc. And have them start at the bottom like everyone else. If their little hearts still are set on banking, how about starting at the bottom of a small branch of a large bank? I doubt seriously very many of the students in programs such as Harvard Business School could handle this for more than a week, right? Almost everyone in the elite business schools comes from an overprivileged background and have no clue how 98% of the rest of us go about our daily lives. Right now, we have too many people in business, especially in the financial sector, starting at the top. Of course, hell will freeze over before this plan goes into effect, but it is a nice idea. I listen to you frequently, even though you quite often, on several subjects, go further out than I. At least I understand where you're coming from, even if I don't always agree. By the way, I'm a 56-year-old white man who has always lived in Portland and whose family on both sides goes back quite a way in this area. You can use all or part of this as you like. I hope that you find it of interest. Bill in Portland. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Never heard that before. That's a great idea. Stop issuing MBAs, especially Harvard MBAs, especially to these elitist little twits whose family can afford the $50,000, $60,000 a year to send them off to get their degrees, and then they go to Wall Street, go to work for Goldman Sachs, and start screwing the entire population of the United States, and through a ripple effect, demolishing third world economies all around the world. That's a good idea. I love that idea. Close it down. Close the bastards down. Absolutely. Go to work at Burger King, you sons of bitches. And get off my lawn, you kids. Oh, my God. Let's take a break. We'll take a break and come back. Have a report from Prairie 2. And a little bit later on in the program tonight, an astonishing article from military.com. However, if you were a frequent visitor to Brad Friedman's website, you would have known what military.com reveals today, months ago. That's bradblog.com. We'll be right back.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
It's come through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field.
21 past the hour.
Exactly real.
All right, from Prairie 2, tonight's take on our economic craziness in this country. Prairie 2 writes, the value of the euro went above $1.50 today for the first time in 14 months. Oil was approaching $80 a barrel but fell back on release of inventory data showing a glut of diesel fuel as the collapsing U.S. economy makes it difficult for refiners to cut production far enough to keep the supply down. The traders were hoping to drive oil above 80 bucks so that the large number of pending futures contracts would be activated, forcing people to buy oil to cover their positions and driving the price thus still higher. The usual suspects, like the too-big-to-fail banks, are hoping to make a killing. Currency traders, also working for these same criminal enterprises, have been driving up foreign currencies by dumping huge amounts of dollars, the dollars they got from you and me for free, dumping them in countries with a strong currency like Brazil. This, conversely, drives down the dollar, and oil goes up ever closer to the triggers on all those future contracts they own. It takes money to make money. It helps if you get that money for free and have no conscience. Jiminy Cricket is under glass in the CEO's office with a pin through him. A bit of history here. Some of Mickey Mouse's biggest hits in the 30s fed on the popular outrage over bankers throwing people out of their homes. The sheriff was often the bad guy in early cartoons. You can learn a little bit about how the usual suspects are able to loot and pillage our economy by watching the Frontline episode, The Warming, that features the adventures of Brooksley Bourne as chairman or chairwoman of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission during the Clinton administration. Not to give away the plot, but we do know how it all turns out. Our heroine, Brooksley Bourne, is summoned before the most powerful man in the world and told by the Dark Lord Alan Greenspan that the market will deal with fraud and she need not concern her agency with such things as enforcing the law. This meeting took place before she suspected that there was any systemic fraud going on. It would be 10 years before the Ponzi scheme she tried to stop would grow to more than $600 trillion and collapse. And by the way, the entire world gross domestic product is less than $60 trillion. My only problem with the Frontline presentation is that they let Greenspan off as basically just being a fool. The man is a criminal with no equal since Hoover Secretary of the Treasury Andrew Mellon, who single-handedly created the last Great Depression. Mellon had a personal fortune that would make Bill Gates look like he digs under the couch cushions for cigarette money. Mellon was put on trial by the Roosevelt administration, but died before the verdict. Greenspan's pretense of stupidity is doubtless aimed at avoiding the same fate. By the way, Greenspan's doctoral thesis was on the land boom of the 20s that precipitated the crash and apparently served as his blueprint for running the Fed and creating the current Great Depression. The only question is, do we have a new Franklin Delano Roosevelt? Greenspan would look good in an orange jumpsuit. Prairie 2. His website is prairienumero2.com. I haven't seen that Frontline episode, The Warming. The Warning. I'm sorry, not Warm. The Warning. Don't worry your pretty little head, little lady. You don't have to enforce the law. The market will take care of it. They certainly told us a bunch of lies, didn't they? They certainly robbed us. They certainly stole us blind. That's what the Bush administration was all about. It really was. That's what Greenspan was all about. Greenspan set it up. While everybody was paying attention to the tech boom, which was also a bubble of like a huge fart bubble in a bathtub. There was nothing to the tech boom. Remember that? Remember the online businesses? All of a sudden you had airhead.com. Oh, I want one. I want some. Everybody was here. I want to buy 1,000 shares. How much? Remember that? And the people who deliver that to us, the same people that deliver the real estate bubble to us, the same people that have delivered the currency bubble to us, are the same people that continue to make money by doing nothing except stealing. Stealing. I wonder how much... Oh, never mind. almost said it. I almost said, and I'm not going to say this, but I almost said, I wonder how much more of this we can take before we finally... make it quit. But I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that. We'll be back after the break. Uncle Mike's Story Corner. And I think you'll like this one. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Mason jar is okay, too. If you see a bank, well, you know what to do.
Now, let me tell you people something. Only banks I like Ernie Banks, all right. And I like the banks of the Mississippi River. And I like banks of Fender Twin Reverb. Hey, when I walk in there, treat me like a dog, gonna hit him in the head with the doo-doo law. Republicans, one and all, their tallywhackers are mighty small. Steal from the poor and give to the rich, gonna make the bank president twitch in a ditch. Aww.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Before the break, I said Uncle Mike's Story Corner, and you're going to like this one. Like might not be the right word. Let's say that with this episode of Uncle Mike's Story Corner, you will be focused. Yes, it's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Gather around, kiddies. You got your hot chocolate. Maybe some hot apple cider because it is almost Thanksgiving. Oh, let's not forget Halloween. Tonight's Uncle Mike's Story Corner is presented, having been written by Susie Madrak. I get tired of asking this question, but I'll ask it anyway. Should this happen in America? Should you have to tear yourself away from your family when they need you the most just to get necessary health care? When so many other countries manage to take care of their citizens, why can't we? 56 days. 55 days. 54 days. Chelsea Cottle began signing her text messages this summer with a countdown. 53 days. 52. At 14 years old, she knew no better way to express what was coming. Day zero was to be October 7th, the day Dad left for Army basic training in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. He was moving 950 miles away from their home in Watertown, 950 miles from Mom. He was leaving, even though Mom was sick with ovarian cancer, even though he had been at her side through two long, miserable rounds of chemotherapy, even though she now faced the likelihood of a third. In fact, Dad was leaving because Mom was sick. In March, he was laid off from his job as a raw materials coordinator for a plastics company called Poly One, where he'd worked for 20 years. His severance package had provided several months' salary, but by August, the paychecks were winding down. Soon, the cost of his family health coverage was going to triple. Then a few months after that, triple again. They needed coverage so Mom could fight her cancer. Dad's solution? A four-year hitch in the Army. So daughter Chelsea counted down the days to his departure. When the countdown reached 49, the text message signature began to annoy and depress her, so she stopped. High school was beginning, her freshman year. In the first week of class, one of the teachers asked, "What do your parents do?" The question jolted Chelsea back to the shifting ground of her family. Mom was working part-time at a Culver's restaurant, preparing for more chemo, worrying about how to pay the bills. In less than 6 weeks, Dad would enter the Army, and her care, Mom's care, would be covered. The trade-off was that he would be far away when Mom needed him home. When Chelsea needed him, too, he would miss all of her high school years, the band performances, the prom. Chelsea thought of all his absence would mean. When she sent her next text message, she resumed the countdown. 36 days, 35 days, 34. Mom and Dad are Michelle and Bill Caudill, high school sweethearts, now 40 and 39, respectively. They have three children, Chelsea the youngest, Alicia, a 21-year-old working at a nearby Holiday Inn, and Little Bill, an 18-year-old ex-high school wrestler. The Caudills are not fond of politics. Michelle and Bill have paid little attention to the shouting this summer over health care reform. They've not gone to any of the so-called town hall meetings. They're well aware that politicians and interest groups would like to trumpet their story or dismiss it to score points in the debate, and they would just as soon avoid all of that. Michelle says, "We're not activists." But this year, the national story of lost jobs became their story. And the saga of families losing health insurance was about to become theirs, too. Except that Bill wouldn't let it. True, he had been interested in the Army for years, and he could always request an emergency leave to come home if Michelle's condition grew dire. Army regulations, you see, allow this if a family member's death is imminent. But for weeks before enlisting, Bill had saw other options. He revised his resume. He answered help wanted ads, then watched the companies cut workers instead of hiring them. He interviewed for one job that would have paid $13 an hour, less than half of what he had been making at Poly One. He didn't get that job. Finally, on May 13th, his 39th birthday, he signed the Army papers. He remembers thinking, "What did I do?" Chelsea learned about her dad's decision when mom picked her up from school. It had been a bad day already, a problem with one of her teachers. Then she had to do the mile run. "I have something to tell you," her mom said after Chelsea slid into her seat. "Your dad enlisted in the Army. There's more. He'll be gone for 4 years." Chelsea started to cry. Another Uncle Mike Story Corner, brought to you by your friends at... we don't have any friends. Susie Madrek is the author. You can find this at crooksandliars.com. Good God. Remember Lamar Alexander, Republican senator from Tennessee? At one time he wanted to be president. Remember him? He is now referred to in press articles as a top Senate Republican. Well, according to roll call, this top Senate Republican took to the Senate floor today. And Lamar Alexander suggested that the Obama White House is plotting to come up with an enemies list, just like the Nixon White House. Yes. Republican Conference Chairman Lamar Alexander, who served in the Nixon White House, offered what he said was a friendly suggestion to the White House not to repeat the errors he saw committed by the staff of former President Nixon. An enemies list. Alexander said, on the floor of the Senate, based upon that experience in my 40 years since then, in and out of public life, I want to make what I hope will be taken as a friendly suggestion to President Obama and his White House. Don't create an enemies list. Alexander says he sees symptoms of the same kind of garbage that was developed by Spiro Agnew and Chuck Colson and that whole group of murderous, ignorant sons of bitches. He says, I see it developing in the Obama administration. Are you referring to the Obama administration's insistence that the Fox News channel is a nest of goddamn propagandists? Is that what you're talking about, Lamar? Huh? Alexander read off a list of examples, he says, support his contention, including a reported effort by the White House to marginalize the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Oh, no. Marginalize the U.S. Chamber. Oh, my God. A supposed effort by the Health and Human Services Department to put a gag order on Humana. The big insurance company, a gag order? Oh, no. The White House move to take on Fox News. Obama's repeated criticisms of banks and investment houses. And the president's move to make insurers the boogeymen of the healthcare debate. Yeah, that's an enemies list, all right. Alexander claimed that the incipient White House enemies campaign extends even to Congress. He suggested that Senate Minority Whip John Kyle was the victim of a sort of payback, saying that after Kyle suggested the stimulus plan wasn't working, the White House subsequently wrote the governor of Arizona that, if you don't want the money, we won't send it. Ooh, that's a real enemies list. God damn, what a threat that is. If you don't want the money out there in Arizona, okay, we won't send it. Oh, threaten. Jesus Christ. Alexander said, this behavior is typical of street brawls and political campaign consultants. If the president and his top aides treat people with different views as enemies, instead of listening to what they have to say, they're likely to end up with a narrow view and a feeling that the whole world is out to get them. And as those of us who served in the Nixon White House know, that can get you into a lot of trouble. Oh, my God. It's just never going to stop. Never is it a White House enemies list. Oh, yeah, Lamar. That's right. The governor of Arizona being told, well, if you don't want the stimulus money, okay, we won't send it. Oh, threats. These sons of bitches just drive me to the edge.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. You know, another topic that isn't getting an awful lot of play right now, I think a lot of the news outlets are afraid to cover this one. NBC and MSNBC has been focusing a lot on Maria Shriver's Shriver's report about women in this country in the workforce and how that's changing everything in this country. I think we're right on the verge, if not have already crossed the verge, where more than 50% of the workforce is female now. which is not necessarily a good thing in terms of income, because so many so-called women's jobs, or even jobs not classified as, quote, women's jobs, end quote, you know what I'm talking about, pay what, 80 cents for every dollar that a male would make doing the same thing. A lot of women are working now in jobs that their husbands either are overqualified for because they've been in the workforce for 20 years, whereas the women have not. The women are taking a lot of these jobs out of desperation. So, you know, when we talk about the workforce being majority female, so what does that mean? I'm not sure, but Maria Shriver is focusing on this. She has this special or a book or something. She's been all over NBC and its affiliates. But one thing that's not being talked about, as far as I know, is the fact that this recession or depression is increasing domestic violence. Shelters and housing programs for women and children are stretched thin across the country because the incidences of domestic abuse are skyrocketing. There is, in North Texas, North Richland Hills in Texas, the director of a shelter there, Open Arms, the program director, Lou Ann Pressler, says, quote, when families are experiencing stress, regardless of what creates that stress, sometimes people's behavior becomes irrational and unpredictable. And this year, Open Arms has seen a 40% increase in referrals from women and children who need transitional housing. Ms. Pressler says, as you start thinking about people being unemployed, people being underemployed, people being disappointed at the lack of success finding work, people losing their homes, it makes women and children a lot more at risk. She goes on to say, some women and children who've needed help recently have had to be turned away because the program that Lou Ann Pressler runs is at its capacity. For the first time in its 21-year history, Open Arms had to initiate a waiting list. According to the Texas Council on Family Violence, 136 Texas women were killed by an intimate partner in 2008. The youngest victim was 14, the oldest was 74. Ms. Pressler goes on, quote, shelters are now as full as they've ever been in my experience, so people end up just doing desperate things. Sometimes they're sleeping on friends' sofas, sometimes they're forced to sleep in their car, end quote. One woman who got help from Open Arms encourages other victims not to give up. She says, quote, it may look like there's no hope, but there is. You can call one place and they'll give you a resource to another place, just keep seeking help. Don't go back. It's not worth it, end quote. You know, I had some freak call this program a couple of weeks ago because I said that capitalism is the worst, the absolute worst economic system where it concerns families. Some people say, well, Mike, it built the middle class. No, it didn't build the middle class. Shivery little attempts at social democracy built the middle class. It was called government-sponsored education. It was called government-sponsored home loans. It was called government-sponsored union organizing efforts. You know, National Labor Relations Board, stuff like that. The government had its hand in everything to try to limit or to try to level the playing field. Capitalism, the kind that the fascists want, the corporatists, the Republicans, the so-called conservatives, removes all of that. That just gets in the way. Government-sponsored student loans or government grants, Pell Grants? Hey, that's communism. Government-guaranteed home loans? Hey, that's communism. The worst possible system for families to try to survive in is capitalism, and especially the kind we have, because these predatory sons of bitches that Barack Obama can't seem to shed himself of, they don't care. They don't give a damn. Nothing. 14-year-old little girl and her cancer-ridden mother has to watch dad go away to join the goddamn army in order to get health insurance? Are you kidding me? No, not, Mike. That's the way it is here. Battered women's shelters filled to capacity where they have waiting lists with little kids? Son of a bitch! No, that's the way it is here, Mike. Not damn. That's capitalism, free enterprise. Those people, they never should have let themselves get in that position, Mike. The collateral damage from what these predatory sons of bitches on Wall Street have done to this country, the collateral damage is just staggering. But nobody wants to talk about it. Let's talk about how women make up the majority of the workforce now for the first time in the history of this country. Ooh! How do they dress when they go to work? Do they wear comfortable pumps? Huh? Oh, we have female bankers now. Oh, and investment counselors. Oh, isn't that lovely?
Men, are you?
List indeed. Lamar Alexander tells the president, don't do an enemies list like my former employer did, Dick Nixon. You know, you shouldn't do that. And the reason, of course, Lamar Alexander's talking about it mainly is because of what Obama and some of the people in his administration now are talking about, among other criminal enterprises, Fox News Channel. Frank Schaefer writing it after Downing Street. Frank Schaefer, the guy who wrote, what was it, Kathy? We had him on. You can go to his website, frankschaefer.com. You know, it was his parents who started the modern Christian evangelical craziness in this country. Anyway, writing after Downing Street, he says Obama's getting criticism for going after Fox News, and Schaefer says that he faults the White House, too, for not going far enough. Frank Schaefer writes, the real issue is not Fox's right-wing bias. The real issue is that Fox News seems to be trawling for assassins. Yep. Here's the letter that White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs should write. Or maybe it should come from the head of the United States Secret Service. Dear Rupert Murdoch, since you are responsible for what is on Fox News, I have a question for you. Do you ever wonder how you will be remembered by Americans and the world, not to mention your children, if someone takes a shot at President Obama? And when asked why they did it, quotes the misinformation spouted by Fox News as the reason. You have dozens of far-right and dangerous and or crazy-seeming commentators working for you, but let's just talk about one as an example of the rest. What of Glenn Beck? Does the name Father Charles Coughlin ring a bell? You want to be remembered as the facilitator of today's version of that deranged radio personality and hater who hounded President Roosevelt. What if a Coughlin devotee has assassinated Roosevelt? Instead of just being a nasty footnote to American history, Coughlin would be remembered as another John Wilkes Booth. What if Coughlin had had someone with money and virtually unlimited influence backing him and amplifying his remarks? How would we feel about his backer? Glenn Beck is a second-rate, not terribly bright, Coughlin-type demagogue with rather dim-witted followers. And you, Mr. Rupert Murdoch, are the paymaster, making his silliness dangerous by giving him a voice that would otherwise be heard only by those who happen to hear him barking at the moon on some lonely street corner. You've given today's Coughlins, the haters, a national platform, and they've taken the lies of the birthers and the deathers and the Obamas, the Antichristers, nationwide. It was a bad day for America when you became a citizen for the sole purpose of purchasing TV stations and invading us with your far-right agenda. But you've gone way past politics, even the politics of hate. You've legitimized actual insanity by widespread repetition of extremist, racist, and religion-based lies to the sort of people who believe the earth is 6,000 years old, that Jesus will come back soon and send everyone not like them to hell, that Obama's the Antichrist. In other words, you've got the keys to the national asylum, and you're stirring up the inmates and threatening to unlock the door. Here's an example of just a small stock of the incendiary rhetoric and barefaced lies your money pays for. Fox News host Glenn Beck has said President Obama has a, quote, deep-seated hatred for white people or the white culture, end quote. Beck has flirted with the idea that FEMA is building detention camps now. Beck has suggested that Obama is purposefully tanking the economy to force young people to work for AmeriCorps. Beck said that Obama is moving us away from our republic and into a system of fascism. Obama said, we are a country that's headed towards socialism, totalitarianism, beyond your wildest imagination. Beck says Obama wants you to work as a bureaucratic slave to government. Beck has said, President Obama, why don't you just set us on fire for the love of Pete? What are you doing? Do you not hear? Do you not hear the voice, the cries of the people who are saying, stop? We would like some sanity in our country for a second. We didn't vote to lose the republic. Beck ran several segments, including one on his radio show, promoting the concept of the secession of Texas from the Union. Beck promotes one-world government paranoia, including a supposed plot to put us all on a global currency controlled by the New World Order. Beck warned his audience about Obama's supposed secret plot to grab our guns. Beck says that it is actually liberal political correctness that inspires right-wingers to go on murderous killing rampages. It's the liberals' fault. Rupert Murdoch, is there a limit? If Beck was shrieking, kill the uppity N-word in the White House, would that be okay too? Would it be any more of an incitement to violence than what Beck is saying now? You can't claim you're not having a baleful impact. How about this? According to the Boston Globe, quote, the unprecedented number of death threats against President Obama, a rise in racist hate groups, and a new wave of anti-government fervor threatened to overwhelm the U.S. Secret Service, according to government officials and reports, raising new questions about the 144-year-old agency's overall mission, end quote. Where is this new wave of anti-government fervor coming from, Mr. Murdoch? Media barons have started a war or two before, but I don't recall one fomenting the climate wherein an assassination attempt becomes virtually inevitable. Far-fetched? Who stirred up that nut in Pittsburgh who shot down three police officers because he believed that Obama was going to order cops to take away his guns? Don't you know that here in America we have a rather large, angry, far-right, well-armed subculture thriving on imagined insults and nursing a perpetual grievance against the other? Don't you have any qualms about feeding them the red meat of hate, lies, and incitement? However you got to this point, Mr. Murdoch, you still have a choice. Rein in Fox News. Fire back. Speak out to undo some of the lies you've told through your people about our president, our country, and the world. Or go down in history as the man who fed the unhinged haters lies until one or more of them boiled over in some desperate act and lashed out. You're playing Russian roulette with American history, Mr. Murdoch. When your name is forever linked to an act of history derailing domestic terror, your billions won't save you from the place in history reserved for a select group of monsters. When your name is linked to our next Oklahoma-type bombing or the killing of one of our elected leaders, nothing else you did in your life will be remembered. Sincerely, Frank Schaefer. Yeah, I agree with Frank Schaefer. Obama administration hasn't gone far enough. I'll tell you what, the President of the United States or whoever makes these decisions for him wants to appoint a stop right-wing, a right-wing radio and television czar and give me a squad of Marines and let me pick the weapons. I will rid the country of this priest, this irritating, bothersome bastard. I'd be happy to do it. No, not violence. Me? Moi? Violence? No, Christ, no. I would just make the rounds of some of these thug studios and just walk in and say, time for you to go. And then they could listen as my squad locked and loaded. That's all.
Another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. I think these little prickish bastards at Fox News, you know who I'm referring to, are upping the ante. They desperately want an assassination of the president. And the reason they want it, Beck wants it so bad it's almost like doing Viagra for him. O'Reilly would love to have it so he could get laid. You know, he could start hitting on his staff and say, you know, I'm the loofah man. I'm the one that got the president shot. You want to have sex? You know how these bastards are. These phony males. But the reason they have upped the ante and want somebody to take the president out is because poll after poll after poll is showing something that these people are fighting to, they think they're fighting against it, but they're actually bringing it about. And that's the death, the total death and irrelevance of the Republican Party. Oh, you know, so a Republican might win an election somewhere. That's not what I'm talking about. The Republican Party has become a rump party of white racist males, blowhards, mildly psychopathic freaks like Beck, the suicider, Hannity, who talks about family values and hangs out at a prostitute haven, no offense against sex workers, in Nevada. O'Reilly, who's just, I don't know, he, every time I see the man, my gag reflex starts to go off. I can't watch Fox News for, you know, for these people. I really can't. But when I see O'Reilly or any of these people on YouTube, you know, immediate seizing up in my throat, like, oh, you're going to throw up. And the pig man, don't even mention the pig man. I mean, this guy is just, ugh. But they want an assassination. Because they know that if the President of the United States is shot, there will be a declaration of a state of emergency here. Much more intense than after what occurred on September 11, 2001. And since every right-wing talk show host who has an influence on their brain-dead audience is a millionaire, a multimillionaire, way above the fray, they are no more concerned about working people or the middle class than they're concerned about toe fungus. These sons of bitches don't care. Like I said before, to them, fomenting this kind of disorder and strife and hatred and ugliness is sport. It's fun to these bastards. It's fun. What else are you going to do when you're making that kind of money, when you have that kind of wealth and you don't make anything, you don't create anything except anxiety and hatred? These guys don't produce a goddamn thing except fear. So when you're making that kind of money and you know that your life is worthless if it weren't for Rupert Murdoch or Premier Radio Network, if you are that useless except for that little hole in the universe that lets you broadcast your garbage, what do you do for fun? You try to burn the society that produced your filthy ass. That's what you do. You try to burn it. Get the Jews against the Gentiles and the blacks against the whites and the haves against the have-nots and the men against the women and, you know, on and on. And just stir the pot. Stir the pot. Keep it going. It's fun. It's fun. The analogy to me is like the Greek gods of mythology. Oh, they got so bored. Wouldn't they? They would get so bored sitting on Mount Olympus. Oh, what are we going to do today? Oh, I don't know. Let's hurl down a pillar of fire and, I don't know, kill some people. Nah, that's too impersonal. Let's pick out a couple of them, a male and a female who are really pretty, and make them fall in love, and then let's kill one of them. Ah. Oh, I love it! To be, or to think you are omnipotent, you can say anything you want, you can do anything you want, and you're a multi-multi-millionaire. When you get to that point, and you're also sick, like these right-wingers and media are, what do you do for sport? Well, you do that! What do you mean, what do you do for sport? God damn! Let's have somebody kill the president. Let's see if they can get Biden, too. Oh, man, wouldn't that be a bitch? Get them both at the same time. Yeah. How do you want to do it, Glenn? I don't know, Bill. What do you think, Sean? I don't know. Let me make a phone call to my puppet master. Hello? I'm sorry to bother you, Mr. Limbaugh, but sick sons of bitches. Stick around when we come back. Military.com and Brad Friedman, Bradblog.com. You're going to love this.
Piety that doesn't suffer rivals. They're waving flags and guns and quoting from the Bible. I hate
Thank you.
truth seekers. Here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Military.com, which is a news outlet for the military, is covering the story of FBI linguist turned whistleblower Sybil Edmonds as their lead story today. The report is by Bryant Jordan. It's a 1,500-word feature article that includes a background summary of Sybil Edmonds' story, which Bradblog.com has been detailing for years. And Military.com also has a summary of the allegations that she offered under oath last August in her sworn deposition following 7 years of so-called forced silence under a court-ordered gag due to the so-called state secrets privilege twice invoked by George Bush's Department of Justice to keep this woman quiet. Why would they do that? Huh? Now, if you've been following Bradblog.com, you have a pretty good idea what this story is all about. But anyway, the military.com now is covering it, not picking up on Bradblog, but picking up, they're doing their own thing. The reporter, Bryant Jordan's piece is well reported, Brad tells me, and includes for the first time, to our knowledge, several forms of denials of Edmonds' allegations by some of Bush's key State and Defense Department officials like Richard Perle and Douglas Feith. They're now answering. Huh? You feel the noose around your neck, you filthy murdering bastards? Who, Sybil Edmonds says, were participants in espionage plots against the United States in order to share military and even nuclear secrets with Turkish and Israeli government operatives. Do you hear me? Richard Perle and Douglas Feith, both Zionists, both deeply embedded in the whole government process in every single Republican administration for the past, well, I don't know, Pappy Bush, George Bush, the dumbass, Reagan. These guys have always been there. Edmonds also offers a very spirited and seemingly common sense response to those denials. And to critics who maintain that she's been offering those allegations due to some form of vendetta. Oh, for Christ's sake. Now, when I say Zionist, I am not using the term as a throwaway pejorative. I know what the term means, and if you don't, look it up. Richard Perle and Douglas Feith are Zionists, purely and simply, as so many people in the neocon movement and in the Bush crime family, upper echelon, were also. Scooter Libby was another one. I mean, it just chock-a-block with Zionists. And believe it or not, they do not put the United States first. They put Israel first. And if somebody wants to do that, you know, the suggestion is, well, why not leave the country and go there? But I digress. If you're not already familiar with Sybil Edmonds' stories, a story, Brad recommends that you get the full article at military.com, the one written by Bryant Jordan. Just as he has previously recommended the excellent cover story interview by CIA vet Philip Giraldi at American Conservative magazine, also published following her August 8th deposition, in which she was finally able to tell her story publicly and on the record for the first time. She did so because the Obama Department of Justice chose not to invoke the state secrets privilege when they had the opportunity this time. If you're already familiar with her story, then let me share some stuff with you here. Brad has put this all out at his website. He tries to highlight the new information in which Jordan, the writer for Military.com, advances the story a few beats. And as Brad points out, every other U.S. mainstream corporate media outlet has simply failed to do this since Edmonds' remarkable allegations have finally become public. Have you heard anything about this? I haven't. Of course not. Hell no. Bryant Jordan leads with the background on the specific aspects of Edmonds' far-reaching allegations, which he will then expand on throughout much of his coverage. For example, this is what Jordan writes. After 7 years of forced silence, a government whistleblower is opening up on what she learned while working as a Turkish translator for the FBI in the wake of 9/11. In sworn testimony to attorneys on August 8th, Sybil Edmonds described a Pentagon where key personnel helped pass defense secrets to foreign agents or provided them names of knowledgeable officials who were vulnerable to blackmail or co-option. And firmly rooted in this espionage program in the 1990s, according to Edmonds' deposition, were two men who, with the election of George W. Bush as president in 2000, found themselves in the Pentagon. Douglas Feith, who would become head of the Office of Special Plans, and Richard Perle, who would become chairman of the Defense Advisory Board. Edmonds told Military.com, quote, they were 100% directly involved. They were not in the Pentagon in the late 1990s, but they had their people inside the Pentagon, end quote. One of those people, she said, was Larry Franklin, an Air Force officer assigned to the Office of Special Plans, who in 2003 passed classified information to representatives of the American-Israel Public Affairs Office, or AIPAC. And by then, Douglas Feith was leading the Office of Special Plans. Now, that's in the article at military.com. Brad says, with that in place, Jordan then offers various forms of emphatic denials from both Perle and Feith, something which apparently other U.S. news organizations have been unable or unwilling to do at all up until now. Now, here's a note. A Brad blog has requested comment from a number of those accused by Sybil Edmonds, including former U.S. House Speaker Dennis Hastert and Mark Grossman, former ambassador to Turkey and undersecretary of state in the Bush administration, who is said to have been the U.S. ringleader in the operation. Of course, Brad blog gets no response. Back to the article on military.com. Richard Perle, today a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and board member for or advisor to other think tanks, including the National Institute for Near East Affairs and the Center for Security Policy, emphatically denied Edmonds' claims in an interview with military.com. Perle said, quote, this woman is a nutcase. Certifiable. She makes wild accusations. She was fired from her job and has been on vendetta against imagined demons ever since, end quote. Imagined demons? Feith, in an email to military.com, said, the other criminal, quote, what I've read on the internet about Miss Edmonds' claims about me is wildly false and bizarre, end quote. Defense Department spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Eric Butterball declined comment, saying any investigation into such allegations would be carried out by the FBI. An FBI spokesman said to military.com that the Bureau's policy is not to confirm or deny the existence of investigation, yada, yada, yada. End quote from the military.com article. As Brad points out, you'll note that Perle engaged in a direct ad hominem attack on Edmonds' character in his direct quote, a non-denial denial. See, he didn't, and Brad's right, he didn't deny anything. He attacks Sybil Edmonds. Anyway, a non-denial denial, if you will, but he is not directly quoted as actually denying the charges, even as the writer for military.com, Jordan, reports that Perle, quote, emphatically denied Edmonds' claims in an interview with military.com, end quote. So if Perle actually did deny the charges directly, you'll have to take Jordan's word on that for the moment. See, because it's not out there. The writer says he denied them, but there's no quote. So, as Brad says, it should also be kept in mind that Perle was one of the key Bush administration players at the State Department advocating war against Iraq, both before and after 9/11, claiming Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and ties to Osama bin Laden, yada, yada, yada. He had also been highly critical of the CIA for not acting on information being supplied by Iraqi defectors, such as Ahmed Shalabi. And who was the other one? What was his name, Kathy? Roller Deck or Boobblehead? Eight Ball. Cue Ball. Yeah. All of that is worth keeping in mind as Perle charges that Edmonds is a nutcase chasing imagined demons. Military.com also received another general blanket denial, this one from the Cohen Group, That's a D.C. lobbying firm where Grossman now serves as vice chairman. The Cohen Group has not answered several requests for comment from the Brad blog in the recent past. And as Brad reported recently or previously, the firm, the Cohen Group, which has represented both Turkey and Israel, sells itself with this pitch.
Mastering the complex and often veiled dynamic where government, politics, media, and business intersect requires a rare combination of knowledge, skills, and experience. Our principals bring centuries of experience at the White House, the State Department, the Defense Department, and Congress.
Oh, my God. There's more. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Nobody knows who's in it. They've been carefully selected. Bipartisan appointees who themselves were not elected. They hold top-level meetings at undisclosed locations to suspend the Constitution and sustain the corporation. Their minutes, notes, and memos can't be shared. And by the way, does anybody know the current whereabouts? National security, above the public scrutiny, policy of legal coup d'etat. Ah, we have a shadow government. Imagine that.
Before the hour, we're talking about an article appearing at military.com and covered fairly extensively at bradblog.com. Brad Friedman, who substitutes for us a lot and who has a website, that's not his claim to fame, substituting for this show. Brad has established himself as a heavy-duty investigative reporter, kind of like Greg Palast and some of these other people who are totally ignored by mainstream media. And if you've been following the Sybil Edmonds story in its long, twisty history, you know what this story is about. But getting back to what Brad wrote today and what military.com has, the Cohen Group, it was founded in 2001 by Clinton's former Republican Secretary of Defense, William Cohen. And It says, the website says, quote, the Cohen Group's reach extends internationally where our principals have developed great expertise in relationships with key political, economic, and business leaders and acquired valuable experience with the individuals and institutions that affected our clients' success abroad, end quote. Instead of receiving a direct denial from Grossman, Brad mentioned above, Grossman is with this firm. And Grossman, of course, is one of the people, excuse me, oh my goodness, who's involved in up to their eyeballs in this. Anyway, instead of receiving a direct denial from Grossman, the article at military.com offers a denial from Robert Tyrer, co-president of Grossman's lobbying firm. Back to military.com, Edmonds claims that much of the Pentagon information found its way into the hands of both Israeli and Turkish operatives through the State Department, courtesy of Mark Grossman, then Assistant Secretary of State for Political Affairs, the third highest-ranking member at the State Department. As Sybil Edmonds described in her August 8th testimony, quote, certain people from the Pentagon would send a list of individuals with access to sensitive data, whether weapons technology or nuclear technology, and this information would include all their sexual preferences, how much they owed on their homes, if they have gambling issues, and then Grossman would provide it to those foreign operatives, and those foreign operatives would go and hook those Pentagon people. We used to call that blackmail. Robert Tyrer, co-president of the Cohen Group, a Washington lobbying firm where Grossman is now vice chairman, told Military.com in an email that Edmonds' allegations against the former ambassador, quote, are completely untrue and ludicrous, end quote. Now, the writer at Military.com, Jordan, goes on to offer a direct response from Edmonds to the notion that she has been disclosing all of her information as some form of bizarre vendetta, as Richard Pearl charged in his non-denial denial that was quoted in the article. This is what the writer at Military.com said. After 7 years of silence, Edmonds said she was glad to be able to finally divulge some of what she'd been forced to keep in, but she doubted any government agency would seriously pursue her claims. There is no indication the current Justice Department is reopening investigations, she said, and neither politicians nor mainstream media have shown an interest. She said, quote, I testified under oath. I have a very successful financial life. I've been married 18 years. I have a family. I have a daughter. I have a lot to lose. I'd have to be either mentally insane or someone who doesn't have anything to lose, who just makes allegations and lies under oath to claim these things if they were not true. Back to Brad. The article also offers information and statements in support of Sybelle Edmonds from others, such as from 18-year FBI executive John Cole. John Cole, who, as the Brad blog covered in detail 2 weeks ago, had corroborated several key elements in Edmonds' allegations, including confirmation that Grossman had been targeted by a, quote, decade-long investigation by the FBI, which ultimately was buried and covered up. Cole, John Cole, has also called for a special counsel to be named to investigate the allegations and have people's feet held to the fire. Have them be held accountable for their actions, he said. Cole also, remember John Cole, he's the 18-year FBI executive. He also added a chilling note to his comments, which we reported at the time. He said, quote, you know, it really irritates me that people are getting away with murder in some cases. They should not be allowed to get away with that. There needs to be accountability, end quote. Murder. In Jordan's article at Military.com, Cole comments on an aspect of Edmonds' allegations which have a fresh resonance this week following the arrest of a top U.S. Department of Defense scientist busted by the FBI in a sting operation after he allegedly attempted to sell nuclear secrets to an undercover agent he thought was representing Israel. Another one, see? Military.com writer says, quote, one of Edmonds' believers is John Cole, a former FBI counterintelligence analyst and author of While America Sleeps, an FBI whistleblower story. Cole, who worked for the Bureau 18 years and now works for the Defense Intelligence Agency at Offutt Air Base, Nebraska, said the pattern of espionage described by Edmonds is familiar to him. He said, quote, in the 1990s, I was responsible for Western Europe and Israel for the counterintelligence cases there. We did have ongoing investigations of officials in the State Department and also the Department of Defense. And he said cases did extend outside the Pentagon to various Air Force bases and the RAND Corporation, something Edmonds also stated in her testimony. Do you understand what's going on here, Truth Seeker? Do you understand Sybelle Edmonds, what she is saying, what Brad Blog has been saying, what Military.com is now saying? Jesus, God. There's a little bit more. When we come back, I'm going to share it with you, and then we're going to take some phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. gets about 6.5 past the hour. I've been quoting from a couple of things here. Military.com, on their lead story today, built upon the testimony that Sibel Edmonds gave back in August, the former Turkish translator who George Bush used the Military Secrets Act to silence over the past 6 or 7 years because she had information about all sorts of criminal activity in the Bush administration, the Defense Department, the State Department, so on and so forth, some of which may or may not have had direct reference to 9/11. Military.com and Bradblog.com has been reporting on this story for half a decade. I mean, this is not new to Brad. If you've been following his website or listening to his online program or listening when he substitutes for me, you've heard him go in great detail about this. He's interviewed Sibel Edmonds on air so many times. The last time he interviewed her, I think it was picked up by the international press. American media will not touch this. Mainstream media. So at bradblog.com today, Brad picked up on the military.com story and has synopsized it and provides play-by-play and color so you can understand it without having to go back and read the transcript from her testimony, Sibel Edmonds' testimony. She was finally allowed to testify under oath. It's a matter of public record. And military.com, a Bradblog, has the entire testimony and the video. So if you, of her testimony. So if you go to bradblog.com, you can access this. But that's what we're talking about. Let me go back to this, almost finish. As Sibel Edmonds had, has said previously, she echoed former FBI executive John Cole's statements about ongoing investigations of various State and Defense Department officials, as well as various contractors. Apparently, scientist Sir David Nozet, who was arrested yesterday for attempting to sell nuclear secrets to Israel, precisely as Edmonds has long charged in her allegations, Nozet has been both an official at the Defense Department and a private contractor sharing information he had collected while working at nuclear facilities in the Pentagon. Back to the military.com article, Bryant says, quote, according to Edmonds, those sought out by Turkish and Israeli agents might actually be working outside the Pentagon. As a result, she testified, the foreign operatives managed to put on their payroll individuals, quote, on almost every major nuclear facility in the United States, RAND Corporation, and various Air Force labs that develop certain weapons technology, end quote. She went on to say, quote, she said this to military.com, quote, there is a black market for everything, including for nuclear-related information and weapons technology, end quote. Finally, Brad writes, in a related note here, we'd like to flag your attention to a certain blogger, Connecticut Man 1, who, at E Pluribus Media, has been digging and connecting a few interesting dots in the arrest of Nozet, reported by the Department of Justice to have traveled to an unspecified foreign country A, as part of his alleged Israeli espionage bid. The blogger has collected some information which suggests that foreign country A could perhaps be Turkey, said to have been working very closely with Israel in all of the matters disclosed in Sibel Edmonds' charges. The blogger, Connecticut Man 1, concludes, quote, it is starting to look like a conspiracy theorist's dream, or just what Sibel Edmonds was talking about all along, end quote. And Brad closes by saying, yeah, or we could just take the discredited Richard Perle's word for it, as so many in the indispensable U.S. corporate media seem to have done, that, quote, this woman is a nutcase, end quote. Now, what happened yesterday was the arrest of, where is it? A former NASA scientist who helped discover evidence of water on the moon. How recent is that, huh? Has been charged with attempting to sell Israel secrets about America's military satellite systems as well as nuclear technology. Stuart Nozet. This is from The Guardian of the UK. I didn't hear anything about this on mainstream media tonight. Did you? Or yesterday? Stuart Nozette, 52, from Maryland, was arrested in an FBI sting after demanding cash and an Israeli passport in return for classified information obtained when he worked with a high-security clearance for U.S. Space Agency, the Pentagon, and an Energy Department laboratory where he helped develop a radar that indicated there is ice on the south pole of the moon. Although the indictment does not allege that Israeli agents had already recruited Nozette, it says that he had already been paid a substantial amount of money to work as a consultant to an Israeli state-owned defense firm in return for, quote, answering questions from the company, end quote. During an FBI surveillance operation before the sting, Nozette also allegedly acknowledged to a colleague that he had committed a crime and threatened to flee the country and sell everything he knows to Israel. The case is potentially a further embarrassment for Israel at a time of unusually strained relations with the U.S. after a number of cases of Americans accused of spying for the Jewish state in recent years. The prosecutor in Washington, Channing Phillips, said, quote, those who would put our nation's defense secrets up for sale can expect to be vigorously prosecuted, end quote. The FBI launched its sting last month when an agent contacted Nozette, an FBI agent, posing as a spy for Israel's intelligence agency Mossad. The scientists and the undercover agent met later in the day at a hotel and discussed an exchange of classified information for cash. Court papers say that Nozette told the agent he had access to much of what, quote, the U.S. has done in space, end quote. He added, quote, these are among the most sensitive subjects and will have to be recreated from memory over some time, end quote. It was then agreed that the scientists would pass the information at a post office. Nozette is heard saying on a wiretap, quote, I don't get recruited by Mossad every day. I knew this day would come, end quote. In the following weeks, the FBI left two envelopes with a total of $11,000 in cash and questions about classified information for the scientists to answer. Nozette replied with information about the U.S. satellite military early warning systems and its attack response system. Israel has previously assured Washington that it had no more spies in the U.S. after the conviction of Jonathan Pollard, a former Navy intelligence analyst who was sentenced to life in prison in 1985. But last year, an 85-year-old former Army engineer, Ben Ami Kadosh, was convicted of spying for Israel for 20 years during the time when Pollard was active. The same Israeli agent, Yosef Yager, handled both men. In 2006, Lawrence Franklin, former Defense Department official, pled guilty to passing information about Iran to officials at AIPAC. Charges against two AIPAC workers of passing the information on to an Israeli diplomat were dismissed. You remember, that just happened a couple of months ago. Dismissed for the sake of not embarrassing the Israelis. Son of a bitch. One of the worst enemies that we have on earth is the state of Israel. Are you not aware of that? And this has nothing to do with Jews. This has to do with Israeli government. It has to do with Netanyahu. It has to do with people who are no more interested in the religious aspects of Judaism where it concerns the survival of the state of Israel than they are interested in, running naked through traffic in downtown Tel Aviv. What they are interested in, though, what these Israeli government officials are interested in, is to have enough power over the United States to dictate, not influence, to dictate foreign policy. And if not that, to have enough of secret information of the U.S. Defense, State Departments, our science division, NASA, to possibly blackmail anyone they want to blackmail in order to get the control. Now, what would you call that if we discovered that all these secrets were being sold to Iran? What would you call that if all these secrets were being sold to the ISS in Pakistan? What would you call it if an Arabic or a Muslim group had these kinds of tentacles inside the U.S. government? What would you call that, truth seeker? And what do we call it when we find out that it's Israel?
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah. You want me to do it again? 21 past the hour. Our lines are open now at 877-996-2556. We'll take some calls. According to Al Jazeera, Israel is pushing to change the laws of war. Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, has instructed his government to draw up plans for, quote, a worldwide campaign, end quote, to lobby for changes in the international laws of war. This follows a special cabinet meeting yesterday to discuss Israel's response to the UN's Robert Goldstone report, which condemned Israel's actions during the 22-day war on Gaza earlier this year. I haven't gotten into that yet, and I wanted to a couple of weeks ago. Goldstone is a South African jurist who is Jewish and a Zionist. By his own definition, he is also a judge. He was the head of the Goldstone Commission. He found atrocious acts committed by the Palestinians, and he reported on those in his report, or he talks about them in his report. But the monumental aspect of the report is the overkill, the horrific destruction that Israel perpetrated against the Gazans. It's a horrific report. And the Israelis have done everything to try to suppress it. So anyway, this came, this idea of changing the laws of war so that Israel could not be accused of war crimes anymore. Jesus Christ, why didn't Bush and Rumsfeld think of this, huh? The meeting also called for a special committee, the formation of a special committee to deal with the international legal consequences of the Goldstone report and the prospect that Israeli officials could face war crimes trials abroad. The Israeli government says that international law needs to be amended in order to fight global terrorism. Oh, really? Netanyahu's office said in a statement following yesterday's meeting, quote, the prime minister instructed the relevant government bodies to examine a worldwide campaign to amend the international laws of war to adapt them to the spread of global terrorism, end quote. The statement added that the cabinet had also instructed justice ministry officials in Israel to form a committee to deal with the prospect of, quote, legal proceedings abroad against the state of Israel or its citizens, end quote. Netanyahu was quoted as saying in the statement, quote, we need to keep punching a hole in this lie that is spreading with the help of the Goldstone Report, end quote. The lie that was authored by a Zionist Jew who is a judge in South Africa. That's the lie that Netanyahu is talking about. A detailed report of the atrocities that were committed when Israel invaded Gaza and butchered hundreds upon hundreds of people. And one thing the Goldstone Report indicates is that the vast majority, the incredible majority of the dead were civilians, and of that group, the incredible majority were children. Now, if those are the lies that Netanyahu is talking about, what Netanyahu wants to do, and again, I'm surprised that Cheney and Bush and Rumsfeld didn't do this before their official torture policy began. But what Netanyahu wants to do is to change, you know, to change the definition of acts that could be punishable as war crimes. He wants to change that. He wants to change, obviously, the Geneva Conventions, the ones about attacking, or the convention about attacking civilian populations, about occupation, what is required in an occupation. It's all laid out in the Geneva Conventions. But the United States and Israel operates way beyond this. We don't play by those rules. As George Bush said, you know, that's garbage. That's, you know, hog snot. We don't do that. We're saving the world for truth, freedom, and justice. So, you know, we're not going to do that. So now Netanyahu, and it's kind of ironic in light of the arrest of yet another American spying for Israel,
Netanyahu is suggesting that the rules be changed. If they want to run over children with a tank, that shouldn't be a war crime. If a month earlier some freak in Gaza had lobbed a homemade missile into southern Israel and it blew up a house. Well, of course the Palestinian child deserves to be crushed by a tank. Why not? I mean, that's the system we use. If we want Iraq's oil, well, God damn it, children have to die, and they will. That's just the way it is. It's not our fault the little bastards are standing around on top of our oil. Where's the moral justification for any of this? Where's the moral element in our continued presence in Afghanistan? What morality is Obama using to justify the continuing murder of people who don't agree with our system of governance? What? Jesus God. All right, we'll be back after the break. You want to talk? Lines are open. 877-996-2556. Stay with me.
Truth seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. A couple of quick emails here. Kathy in Green Bay writes regarding Netanyahu's ordering of committees within his government to explore ways to change the rules of armed conflict, international law. Kathy writes, so, we didn't want to change international law in response to a powerful dictator with one of the world's most powerful militaries. In fact, we expanded it at Nuremberg. But we want to change it for men with pipe bombs and box cutters? And a few shoulder-held missile launchers, too, I guess. Tom writes, you know, Mike, I sometimes wonder if these extremist Zionist groups aren't more likely than Aryan nation types or Muslim terrorists or racists or right-wing Christians or even corporatists to commit assassinations in this country. I shudder to think what sort of reactions you get when you even suggest that the Israeli government is corrupt. Well, they used to be kind of weird, but, you know, from American Jews who saw me as, you know, through that prism of anybody who speaks out against Israel is an anti-Semite or hates Jews. But I think over the years, American Jews that listen to this program realize that that's not the situation at all. Not even close. You know, I've said before that as long as I'm doing talk radio for whomever, I reserve the right to criticize the behavior of any state, and in some cases, non-state, what are they called now, non-state actors, you know, like Al-Qaeda or Taliban or whatever. But certainly I reserve the right to heap as much criticism as I think is deserved on any state. I don't give a damn if it's a state put together by people who swear Muhammad blesses their government, or that Abraham blesses their government, or that Jesus blesses their government. I don't give a damn. I couldn't care less. You know, Israel is to Jews what Iran is to Sunni Muslims, I guess, what Saudi Arabia, not Sunnis, what Iran is to Shia, and what Saudi Arabia is to Sunnis, Israel is to Jews. Okay. And America is to these evangelical Christians. They're all crazy. They're all nuts. And they all want to destroy the world. You know, to hell with that. I will criticize any state. I don't care how many people write to me and say, oh, you Jew hater, you son of a bitch. Didn't you ever hear of Auschwitz? Yeah, I heard of Auschwitz. I've read about Auschwitz and Treblinka and Bergen-Belsen and Sobibor and on and on and on. So, we're not talking about the Holocaust. We're talking about Israeli government foreign policy. So, enough of that. John is in North Hollywood listening on KTLK. John, welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi, fellow speakers. You're talking about the justification for actions of whether it's this country or our mini-me,
right?
Israel.
Yeah. Well, we've got a couple of mini-me's out there. Some of them some of them worse than others, but go ahead.
The main mini-me, in my opinion. The justification, not Sobibor or you know, what Hitler may have done, even though they say so, and it's not democracy, that, you know, which was used on us for this Iraq war and everything else across the face of the earth. But I think it's a more modern manifest destiny. They may call it the New American Century Project or something, but it's just a justification to dominate like Alexander the Great wanted to.
But the United States can't do that anymore. We don't have, we're not the economic engine that we used to be. Most of the world loves Barack Obama, but hates American foreign policy. We are stretched so thin. Our monetary system's about to collapse.
You forget the fact that although our economy may not be way up high, our military is all pervasive. And mini-me is part of our military, as well as the mercenaries, non-state actors of which you speak. The mercenaries, not just Al-Qaeda.
Right. Like Blackwater.
Z and Triple Arch or whatever that, Triple Canopy and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, some people may call this a tin hat rant that I'm making, but there are lots of other ways to control people across the face of the earth than just, you know, what you see on the news media and on the stock market.
That's very true. Thanks, John. I think you meant tinfoil hat rant. I know. I get accused of that, too. Thanks, John. Appreciate you checking in. Gordon is calling from Oklahoma City. Hi, Gordon.
Hi, Mike. I'd like to say hi to all the truth seekers out there and people I've been in contact with as well.
Well, you don't call very often. I think the last time you called was about 3 years ago.
it's been a while. I don't call. I know I email quite a bit.
And a lot of your stuff I read on the air. Well, glad to hear from you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I wanted to address the topic that was brought up during the first hour, and I'm sorry I can't remember the gentleman's name. I believe it was a fellow that wrote about eliminating or at least discouraging the Harvard MBA program.
Right.
And actually, I think he's really onto something.
I do, too.
There's a tremendous brain drain, and it's really affecting the innovation because we all know we're in the depths of a deep recession, and so much of the productivity and net gains and jobs have been through innovation. Yet the people that are being encouraged to go into the fields like the investment banking and Wall Street and such, that's attracting our brightest people. And I know it may sound, you know, odd. People say, well, look what they've done. You know, how can these people be so bright? But they're getting away with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're getting away with billions of dollars worth of bonuses. And it doesn't matter if the companies are going broke. I mean, these guys are brilliant to pull a scam off like this.
Well, they're brilliant. You're right. But they're brilliant in the same way that Ponzi, Bernie Madoff was brilliant until he wasn't anymore. And this is what disgusts me. By the way, the guy that wrote that was Bill in Portland, Oregon, who wrote that email that I read earlier tonight. Bill in Portland. But, Yeah, you know, he is onto something, Gordon, because these are from the elite class, these people, the elite class of Americans, the ones who can afford $50,000, $60,000 a year for their schooling, and then they immediately put on their mask, strap on their holster with the six guns, and ride off to rob the stage and the train and anything else they can pull their guns on. They're goddamn thieves.
That's right. And see, the point is, and I think to really get down to this, you take somebody that's earned a postdoctorate degree in some very narrow, highly specialized field,
mm-hmm.
and they might be pulling in $50,000 a year, maybe, you know, and they're working on some cutting-edge technology that, let's say it's in the fields of medicine, that's going to mm-hmm. help us all. And then their friend earned an MBA. And then now they're making $500,000 a year, and something's backwards about that.
Sure, of course it is. But that's what you get when you live in a society that is owned by predatory capitalism. You know, it just never fails to amaze me when I get these squeaky little right-wingers who call in or send me emails about how wonderful capitalism is, and I want to say, you know, how has it benefited you, pal? And then they say, well, I got a job. I bought paid for my house. I've been working, you know. And I want to say to them, but don't you understand that you're part of America, and America is being eaten alive by predatory capitalism? And I might as well talk to the wall.
Well, that's true, because actually the people that are saying that and that are defenders of capitalism, they're not capitalists.
No, they're being used by it.
Right.
But,
and actually, you know what, the result of this is, could end up being we're on the same track as Eastern Europe, because there's no, you know, they were being robbed by the elite.
Right.
You know, the people that were the higher echelons in the party, they were living it up and drinking their Stoli's vodka and chowing mm-hmm. down on the caviar, while the rest of the people were just living in slums. But and we're heading the same way, because neither, you know, they had no innovation either. They were just copycatting.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. And everything about the communist empire, the Soviet Union, was a Potemkin village, you know, it was nothing but fake walls. You push against the scenery and it all collapsed. It always tickles me when people talk about, well, Ronald Reagan defeated Soviet communism. No, he didn't. Soviet communism was doomed to fail the moment that the Bolshevik Revolution made that terrible left turn in right turn, I should say, into totalitarianism and state control of everything. That was the end of it. That was the absolute end of it. So anyway, hey, listen, Gordon, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. Don't be a stranger. All right.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
All right, man. Take care. Take care. We got a break here? Yeah, we do. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. To our crew, that includes but is not limited to Sherrod Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kay Petrini, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, and Bridget Wolf. Kathy Bay is the executive producer and engineer of this program. Back to your calls. Mark is in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Really enjoy your program.
Thanks.
Long-time listener. I didn't know if you all had discussed this yet this evening, but Frontline, PBS, did an outstanding program last night called The Warning.
Yeah, we mentioned it. I haven't seen it yet, but somebody said you've got to see it.
Oh, you got to see it.
Yeah.
It is about the efforts of Brooks Lee Bourne.
Right.
The at the Commodities Futures Trading Commission trying desperately to regulate this derivatives market.
Yeah, she was told by Greenspan to go sit down and be quiet.
Yeah. Well, by Greenspan, Richard Rubin, and Larry Summers.
Right.
Just a remarkable program. I highly recommend it to,
okay.
To all of your listeners and to you. It is frightening that these type of markets exist out there, totally unregulated, and even today.
Uh-huh.
You saw Congress's attempts to water down any effort to regulate this market at all. They just want to leave it to Goldman Sachs and the others to really kind of manipulate and make all the money.
Isn't this Goldman Sachs a criminal enterprise? I had no... Are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea. I didn't know anything about Goldman Sachs, until all hell broke loose. To me, it was just an investment house or something. I don't know what it was. But... now that I have learned a little bit, it's like, oh, my God, how do these people exist?
Well, what do we do, Mike? I mean, what is a regular person who wants to have a 401k or a retirement or just wants to have a steady return on their money?
I don't know.
Just to have a reasonable retirement. Nothing fancy. Just a reasonable retirement due if these people are just going to continue to take, siphon off all the money and leave us all with 401ks that are half what they were a year ago,
Well, or less. The only way, I don't know how to handle it except go back to put it in a coffee tin and bury it in a backyard, because these people are not going to stop. These predatory capitalist sons of bitches on Wall Street or wherever it is, they are not going to stop. Goldman Sachs already, as have several of these other companies, these investment houses, they're even coming up with more. Now they're taking credit card debt and consolidating it and slicing it and dicing it and selling it to these fools, as some kind of a, I don't even know what the term is, derivative or whatever. Nothing will stop them. Nothing short of what I laughingly refer to as Malloy's brand of democratic socialism or social democracy. And included in that is the complete nationalization, that means ownership, of banking, energy, healthcare, transportation, weapons production. And until that happens, until it's nationalized, it's not going to change. Why should it change?
Yeah.
There is no motivation to change. I mean, I'm being devil's advocate here. I completely agree with you.
Well, I can't imagine why a person like Larry Summers would be anywhere near the White House.
Why? Because why would Tim Geithner be our Secretary of the Treasury, for Christ's sake? I mean, come on. Obama is, the more I see Obama in action, the more I'm aware of what a lot of people in this country are aware of long before me and tried to tell me, Malloy, wake up. Jesus Christ is just as bad as the rest of them. I don't think he's just as bad as the rest of them, but he's afraid to do anything because he knows. He knows. I think once you become president, they sit you down and say to you, listen, there's something we have to tell you. All this democracy and representative government stuff, that's the myth. Now, you can resign now and make your great big moral statement. Of course, we'll have to kill you then. Or you can stay on and be president and just accept the fact that you don't have any power. The legislature has no power. The judiciary is just sitting out there with its thumb in its butt. The real power in this country is in corporate America and its handmaidens in the financial services industry, in the weapons industry, in the pharmaceutical industrial complex. As far as being president or representative or senator, just shut up and be president. Go down in history, Mr. Obama. You're the first African-American president. Good for you. But don't think that you got here because people punched a button with your name on it in a voting booth. I mean, so
I'll tell you, if we had people like Brooks Lee Bourne as regulators, it would do a lot to start us on the path.
Well, yeah, and Sure,
and we're never going to get there.
And, and what we also need is reenact a law, the Glass-Steagall Act from way back in the 30s that prevented banks from being, on the one hand, repositories for all our money, and on the other hand, able to dick around in the financial risk business. Mortgages and insurance and all this, or not mortgages, but insurance and derivatives and all these weird instruments. Investment banking and standard banking has got to be separated. It was, reconnected during the Clinton years, thanks to, Phil, what's his name? The former senator from Texas. It's such a long, twisty road. I guess it was Sega, but Mark, I gotta leave it there. Thanks, pal. It's just, man, you know, it should be crystal clear to everybody except a conservative or Republican why the right wing in this country has been trying to kill everything that FDR did back in the 30s. Because everything that he did was a protection against this that restricted and restrained predatory capitalism. We can't have that. Son of a bitch. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.